You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Michael Kist. Benjamin Solak. It's the Kist and Solak Show, presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation.
You are flying high on the Kist and Solak Show. This is episode 46, brought to you by the fine folks at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow me on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. Nailed it that time.
Attaboy.
As always, joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. 8-year streak without a bad day, Mr. 2-day streak without abandoning his good friend Michael. He is Benjamin Solak. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
Man, every day is a good day to be alive, Mike. I'm glad to be on the podcast. Glad to have not abandoned you for 2 days in a row. If you continue to give me intros like that, however, that streak will not last very long.
So, Ben, we've got the main topic for today is going to be previewing the Eagles' defense and how they match up against the vaunted Redskins offense led by Colt McCoy. Before we get into all of that, let's jump into, because we don't have a regular injury report like we would from a Wednesday. We're recording on Thursday morning, so we haven't gotten that injury report yet, other than the vague week-to-week, day-to-day Doug speak, which you have to kind of wade through. But Ben, one thing that we do know, and Jim Schwartz alluded to this in his press conference, I alluded to it on the last show, but on the first drive against the Giants last week, linebacker Nigel Bradham broke his thumb in three places.
More than two.
That is correct. He actually got surgery on it. He now has a cast on that hand. I believe he's still planning to play. But and look, I haven't been the most complimentary of Bradham's play this year. But if it's no Jordan Hicks, no Nigel Bradham, the report is that it's Nate Gary who would take on Mike linebacker responsibilities, in which case, theoretically, he would be making the defensive calls, and that is a frightening proposition considering how he played against the Giants. And I mean, at that point, you hope to get Avonte Maddox back, who is day-to-day right now, quote-unquote, and maybe you can go more big nickel, which would allow you to put Malcolm Jenkins more in the box in that type of role, in his linebacker role that he played a lot last year. And I would argue that he would be the one making the mic calls, because I guarantee you, and this was on film pre-snap against the Giants, that he knows the calls a lot better than Gary and can execute them a lot better. And if Gary has the same number of snaps as Kamugrije Hill again, I might lose my mind then.
Yeah, I don't think that'll be good. My question is, what has Gary done at all this year?
I don't know.
To indicate, right? Like, I'd rather see Leroy Reynolds out there than Gary, because at least Leroy's played in the league for more years and has a better idea for what's going on. He's obviously more athletically limited, but I feel like Reynolds will probably just give you more in terms of snap-to-snap consistency and, yeah, like, being in the spot you expect him to be in.
Yeah.
When it was a three-way battle for Will, you know, with like Joe Walker, Nate Gary, and Camus back way back in training camp, and this was a thing. My bet was Gary. I said, I think, you know, Gary in year two is going to have taken a step forward. And then you saw in training camp, he doesn't look comfortable in short zones. Obviously, he's got the safety background. When you played safety, Mike, you're way deep back there. You obviously have to react to things quicker because you have greater distance to cover. But it's not like things are happening in front of you very bang, 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 bang. When you're a linebacker and you're so much closer to the line of scrimmage playing these zone coverages, you have to be much more instinctive and kind of anticipate things a little bit better. And Gary, I think, really struggles with that. Something that you saw where he doesn't really know how to get to his particular spot drops when he's got a hook curl where he's got a curl flat depending on the route concept. You obviously have to change your zones when we talk about these pattern matching ideas. These are things that Gary seems to very much struggle with. And then you put a 234, actually he's gotten bigger, 238-pound dude who's an ex-safety, and even probably 235 is generous. Let's put him at 235. Up there with offensive linemen, he does not have an instinct to play physically whatsoever, and he's a liability in the running game. I just don't know what he's done to the point where you want to get him onto the field against somebody like Reynolds, who obviously is like more a special teamer, but at least has been in the league for more years and is probably just a more consistent, reliable, known quantity. That being said, just put Camus out there and solve the whole freaking problem.
Camus has played like one, and I've talked about this before, Camus has played like one of the better linebackers on the team, and I think that he has earned those snaps, and even in recent weeks has been playing with an injured thumb, and I mean, he's been playing really, really well, so I agree with everything.
The thing about Camus and not wanting to put him to Mike that I can understand is that Camus is by far the best Eagles linebacker at coming down over the edge and blitzing or setting against the run, just coming line of scrimmage. And that's really nice. That's a good thing to have, especially if, let's say, like Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis are out there and the Redskins are going a lot of two tight end sets and you want to be able to get a guy over that. Well, Camus is a great guy to do that. He can't do that if he's playing Mike, right? And so you don't want him half the time to be the mic backer calling signals, and then randomly you're pulling him down onto the line. You have somebody else doing it. Like, that's a lot of discontinuity. So I can get that. So Gary can be the mic without being out there more than Camus.
Right.
If Bradham and Hicks are both injured, then no, that can't happen. Man, okay. If Gary's out there more than Camus, yeah, it's going to suck. I would like, you should be willing to sacrifice the Camus on the edge thing, but I get why they find that so valuable. He's made great plays from that alignment that we've seen, and it adds another wrinkle, another style of play, a different piece that you can put on your defense that really nobody else in that linebacker room, even Bradham and Hicks, don't have.
You know, it's interesting, and as we talk about this, what's going to force us to play those linebackers at a rate that we probably wouldn't want to, and that would be 12 and 13 personnel from the Washington Redskins. And I just pulled this up while you were talking. I mean, they're a little over league average. They have Vernon Adams, they have Jordan Reed, but they only run 12 and 13 personnel as 2 and 3 tight end sets 26% of the time. And I looked to see if that changed last week. You know, you have a changing quarterback. Paul Richardson is out for the year.
You did all of this while I was talking?
That's correct. I did. I'm very good at navigating Warren Sharp's website.
That's the thing. I'm so, like, I love everything that, like that Sharp's got is fantastic, and I love doing, like DVOA. It just takes me so long to figure out, like, all right, how do I organize by ranking? Like, how do I do this, that, and the other thing? I can never figure these things out.
So, yeah,
very impressed.
They stuck with 26% on 12 and 13 personnel against the Cowboys as well. They're still running 11 personnel 70% of the time, which is surprising to me, again, with Richardson out and the depth at wide receiver that they are lacking.
You know why I think that they run 12 and 13 personnel not as much as they should?
Because they're scared of getting Jordan Reed injured again?
Well, there's that. Though, obviously, the the referees clearly don't care about that as much. That hit was unbelievable. Oh, that wasn't called on Jordan Reed. That was shocking. But no, it's that they've got too many slot receivers. They're putting Trey Quinn out there, Mr. Irrelevant. Obviously, you got Michael Floyd and Josh Doctson, but they love to run out of condensed splits, and they love to do out of 11, and they love to bring Quinn in jet motion. You saw this a lot against the Cowboys with Colt McCoy back there. And so you feel like you have to get these wide receivers out in the field, you know, when really you don't. You just have to put tight ends out there and cause problems. It's weird for Philadelphia, though, because do you want the Redskins to come out in 11 and potentially, you know, spread you out and threaten your defensive back depth? Or do you want them to come out in 12 and 13, condense the splits, and threaten your linebacker depth? Right. How do you want to die today? Like, what do you want to be the problem? When I'm thinking about it, watching McCoy, obviously knowing he's a backup, I think to myself, man, like, it makes sense for the Redskins to really try to run the football. And they were very first and 10 pass heavy with McCoy, which I did not expect.
They were. I was very surprised.
Yeah. Right. No, they were, and like a lot of play action RPO stuff, but they were very willing to leave the ball in his hands. He's a smart dude.
Ben, for the first three quarters, and I looked at this because it didn't become a two-score game until the fourth quarter. For the first three quarters, their run-pass balance was 62% to 38% with a backup quarterback, and you're supposed to be a run heavy establish the run team. I was.
That's aggressive.
Bamboozled by the whole thing. And let's get into it because we're just diving headfirst into the main topic here, which is the Redskins offense against the Eagles defense. And of course, we have to talk about quarterbacks first. So usually what we do is we cite some rankings when we dive into these matchups. But here's the thing, you know, we talk about red zone offense, third down and all that stuff. I don't know if you've heard, Ben, there's been a recent quarterback change for the Redskins with Alex Smith now out for the year, and his future is kind of in question too with that spiral fracture where his bone punctured through his skin. So that puts the aforementioned Colt McCoy as the starter. And, you know, I broke this game down in depth with the Dallas Cowboys last week with Mark Schofield on the QB Sco Show episode 4. If you haven't started listening to that series yet, shame on you, because we pack that baby with a ton of scheme stuff and there's some history references that you'll enjoy if you're a nerd like me. But anyway, Ben, the central theme of that show really was the fact that, and I wrote this up for BleedingGreenNation.com too, it was that Jay Gruden didn't really change his scheme or reel in his playbook from a depth of target perspective either, along with that run-pass balance. So he still ran his typical like tagging levels on the backside of everything. Three-man daggers, four verts all over the place, and the variations that go along with it, sail concepts, et cetera, et cetera. There was a ton of downfield stuff that they tried to get going against Dallas, and some of it worked and some of it didn't because you're relying on an inconsistent quarterback to make those throws and make those reads. But with a backup quarterback, you know, putting up 23 points, throwing two touchdowns, 268 yards against that Cowboys defense. Now, granted, he threw in three interceptions, but the Cowboys defense, I would say, is an average defense, but they're very good at limiting explosive plays, and they typically make you earn it. So 23 points against that defense on a short week with their best weapons being tight ends in the passing game. There's been no Chris Thompson. There's been no Jameson Crowder. You know, I got to say, you're of the same mind that I was impressed by the aggressive mentality that Jay Gruden had and probably will continue to have against this beat-up Eagles secondary. And that said, their pass offense still ranks 28th in efficiency per Football Outsiders DVOA for the season, and that is not great.
I was about like halfway through the second quarter of the offense against the Cowboys, and I was like, oh, so they're just doing with what Doug did with Nick Foles when Foles came in.
Right.
Right. It was very reminiscent in the sense that the offense stayed aggressive. It stayed pass heavy. There were a ton of option looks, however, like plays that could have been runs that were actually passes. And most importantly, I think McCoy threw to his second or third read like twice the entire game. Right? Yeah. Like it was all three of his interceptions were just like, well, this is my first read, so here we go. And the thing about McCoy is like, you know, I was jotting down some just like notes, you know, some scouting notes just based off the one game. You know, pocket presence, good. Pre-snap recognition of blitzes, I thought was great. A mental clock inside of the pocket, ability to get the ball out, you know, evaluating when to get to his check down, like all that, like very good, like mental and tangible stuff, good mobility. He's been a great mover since his time at Texas. And then he can be accurate, but he just has a pop gun arm. He just doesn't have great arm strength.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like he can put a little bit of zip on it, but just generally he ain't pushing the ball to the boundary. He ain't pushing the ball down the field.
On that interception, that three-man dagger, the one to, I think it was to Mo Harris, he hung that baby up there, and that sucker bobbles in the air on him.
No, and even the first one on the little wheel route to Trey Quinn, he had Trey Quinn. He just couldn't get it to him. He had to send that puppy over a trailing corner and drop it in the bucket against the sideline. And you need to throw that thing with touch, but it needs to also have timing. It needs to have pace on it because it's a small window. Yeah. It's a tricky NFL-style throw. You need to have touch, but also with pace. And McCoy just put that thing right in Anthony Brown's lap. I mean, it wasn't even close. And so that's the thing is, like, what Philadelphia was able to do so successfully with Foles when they made their Super Bowl run with a backup quarterback, don't know if you remember that, was that they were able to uncover his first read constantly and make it so that Foles did not have to read a full defense, make decisions, you know, manipulate safeties, evaluate zone coverages. It was kind of just point and shoot. It's kind of this, like, you know, he's a point and shoot quarterback. We know a lot of times people ask, like, we do the draft stuff, and people ask about Kyler Murray, the Oklahoma quarterback.
Yeah.
And we say, well, the issue with Kyler is he's a point and shoot, is that he gets the ball, he does a ball fake, he rolls out, and then he just chucks it to the first guy.
He's not an anticipator.
Right, exactly. And if his first read isn't open, Murray has the evasiveness to just continue running around back there until somebody's wide open, and then he throws it to that guy. Yeah. Right? And McCoy's point and shoot in that way. You're just not going to have gigantic windows, obviously, when you're the Redskins playing an NFL style of defense. So very reminiscent, in my opinion, of what Philadelphia did successfully with Foles. So why was it not as successful for the Redskins? Well, number one, Colt McCoy's not as good as Nick Foles. McCoy's always been a backup. Foles has been a fringe starter. And number two, Washington doesn't have the weapons that Philadelphia was able to have to win one-on-one matchups while Foles was in there. You know, right. Jordan Reed was once a Zach Ertz in this league, but that was about 5 years ago, right? You know, Josh Doctson, everybody hoped he was going to become an Alshon Jeffrey, but he clearly has not been in that way. And we should bring up Doctson because, and I didn't pull up the tweet beforehand because I'm ill-prepared for the show. Okay, James Coe of, I believe, NFL.com, who does fantasy work for them. He was the one who dropped this, more so from a fantasy perspective. But Coe noted that Josh Doctson's target share of the offense drastically increased once Colt McCoy came out in the field. So we were talking about 13% target share and 19.6% air yard share with Smith as the quarterback. In one game with McCoy, target share went up from 13 to 31. Air yard went up from 19 to 39. So that's, let me think, a lot. That's a fair bit. And so it's clear that Doctson is probably their best one-on-one, 50-50, you know, man-beating contested catch style of wide receiver in the sense that you can just get the ball up to him and ask him to go get it because that's always been how he wins. Obviously, they use Trey Quinn as a little slot machine there as well. But a lot of it has to be one-on-one man-beaters. And you saw that, a ton of wheel routes and a ton of high-low ideas, some very simple one-read stuff. Yeah. For McCoy, more so than they ever did with Smith, which you can move the ball with that if you can win one-on-one matchups. And hey, if Philadelphia's corners aren't healthy, yeah, they're going to win some one-on-one matchups. You know, that's what the Saints, Drew Brees had such an incredible game because Brees just tested man coverage and said, hey, Chandon Sullivan, make a play on this football. And Chandon Sullivan was like, what? Who? Me? The Redskins had the opportunity to move the ball through the air in that way. It's just, it's going to be like the Foles offense for Philadelphia. It's very, very fragile. It's very predicated on pulling off those one read ideas. And if you can't, you're kind of screwed.
And how can they help that? Because you talked to me about this before the show about how, you know, with the running game, what they can do to kind of disguise some things and maybe cause some communication issues for this linebacking core by integrating some different things, some pre-snap shifts, some motions. What did you see from this offense with their running game that could lead to success for them against this confused linebacking core if Bradham is unable to go?
It's very, very interesting. We talked about, you know, do you come out in 13 and expose the Eagles linebacker depth issues? Do you come out in 11, spread them out and expose the Eagles corner issues? Like, pick your poison. The Redskins, from what I saw on tape, and I didn't check the numbers to see if this backs this up, but from what I saw on tape, it seemed to me like they're one of those teams that wrongfully spreads to pass and then goes condensed to run.
Yeah.
Which just also spread to run and just leave people outside of the box. That's the prevailing mindset. Instead of putting, you know, eight blockers in to handle eight defenders, leave six blockers in to handle six defenders, and then there's just more space inherently because there's two, four less people that you have to deal with in the box. What you see from Washington as general rules are this. They're gonna stack receivers and then motion the back guy, the guy not in the line of scrimmage, in jet motion. That's gonna be play action. That's not gonna be a run. They want you to think it's gonna be a run. It's not. It's usually play action. And then that little jet guy will just be a little flat route, a little flare route off to the opposite side, to the motion side, and whatever receiver's on that side is gonna run deep and they're gonna bring a crosser from the opposite side, and it's like very just common idea. But if they bring in what we would call zip motion or a cross motion, in the sense that, you know, a wide receiver kind of looks like he's doing jet motion, but he stops before he gets to the tackle, right? He doesn't cross the ball. He just goes like in like a tight end H-back situation, or a cross motion. A guy who started as an H-back, right? A tight end off the line of scrimmage,
right,
just goes and switches to the other side. Very frequently, those motions are going to key run, and they will key play action, but they will frequently key run for Washington. The reason being, and this is something that Philadelphia also does, you introduce that late man to the box, and if the defense needs to shift their front, if the defense linebackers need to adjust their gaps, well, if you motion and then snap, they have very little time to do it, and you can catch them out of position.
Yeah.
And so very often you'll see a motion into the formation, either that zip motion or the across motion. It will change the running strength. You know, it'll, instead of there being three blockers or two blockers to one side, now it's two blockers to the other side. It'll change the running strength of the formation. It'll be a quick snap right afterward. And they love to get Adrian Peterson outside on those plays. So bring a motion inside, pull a corner in, and then crack toss, pin, pull, sweep,
yeah,
little tackle lead, right? That style of stuff. And you get Peterson, a guy who obviously is a truckload to handle in the open field, even at his advanced age. You get Peterson moving outside. You get good angles with that motion coming in. When they spread to run, it's a lot of inside zone stuff. It's
right,
just a lot of like more typical zones. So they kind of have, in my opinion, like a bit of a two-faced running game in that regard. And that's what you see in terms of what you're going to key on from pre-snap motion when you're anticipating the run from Washington.
Quick snapping, motions, and then quick snapping, or shifting and then quick snapping. blocking is something that the Eagles have struggled with. And obviously they're going to, with the way that, you know, their starting 11 is not the same from week to week. We saw it against the Saints. We saw the Giants do a ton of it against us. And I would imagine that the Redskins would try that as well, get us communicating and make things difficult for us. So the game plan may have to be simple again for Jim Schwartz. And Ben, you know, for this Redskins offensive line, I had to do a this versus that. What I did is I looked at the beginning of the season compared to what it looks like now for that offensive line, or at least the starting unit that they rolled out against the Cowboys. So there are three consistent positions for them right now. And I use the term consistent very loosely because this has not always been the case for them right now. But week one versus week 12, Trent Williams to Trent Williams stays the same. He's been banged up prior to the season as well.
Yeah.
Left guard, Sean Laval. You get a downgrade to Jonathan Cooper.
I really appreciated how hard you tried to pronounce that and act like you knew that was what the pronunciation was.
And I tried to
I'm just
going to
say this real confident and just keep talking and nothing's going to happen. I'd like to make it clear, I have no idea how to pronounce his last name either. I just know when you're BSing. I can smell it by this point.
It's amazing. Yeah, no, you called me on it. So that whole center situation, Chase Roullier, I guess, to Chase Roullier stays the same.
Chase Roullier. And Matt LeFleur.
LeFleur. And you get right
every
guard.
Every name that I can make French becomes French.
Exactly, even if it's not even close to French. So Brandon Scherff downgrades significantly to Tony Bergstrom. And then Morgan Moses to Morgan Moses, that stays the same. So this is a team that wanted to run the ball and make just enough plays on offense while depending on their defense to win games. Those downgrades, Laval to Cooper, Scherff to Bergstrom, they are massive. They cannot be understated. And I don't even think Cooper is that awful. I mean, he's certainly not good, but the downgrade to Bergstrom was getting flat out abused by the Cowboys defensive line. Mm-hmm. Now, what has helped them this season, in my opinion, is they have the best backup tackle in the league in Ty Nesecki for when Williams or Moses gets hurt. So that's helped them achieve some kind of consistent play on the bookend. So even when a tackle goes down, you know, which they have at various points in the season, you don't just see a big time collapse until they both go down. And you have to play Garen Christian, the rookie out of Louisville.
Bless.
Who just is not even close to ready yet. Doesn't have the functional strength. Doesn't have the technique. Super raw prospect coming out. So, but Ben, this is an advantage. And Pro Football Focus agrees with their offensive line versus defensive line matchup numbers that this is an advantage for the Eagles. Especially in the interior. When I think Fletcher Cox against Tony Bergstrom, Timmy Jernigan, he should be able to pop out with some flash plays. And one last point before I let you have at it, Ben, but this matchup in the trenches, because of that instability along the offensive line for Washington, they're really struggling with stunts and games. And that's something that Michael Bennett does very, very, very well. And I think if you continue to use those with him, he's going to have a big day. And I like the idea of kicking Brandon Graham inside against the guards on long passing downs. It would be really nice to see a solid performance from him, also backed up in the box score. Ben, what say you?
How did you pronounce Sean's last name?
Laval.
That's correct.
Yeah, boom.
Attaboy. Boom. Okay, yeah. No, according to Pro Football Reference's pronunciation guide.
Not a doubt in my mind. Not for a second.
Yeah, never once. Not even once. Bergstrom is the, what is he? He's the 66, the right guard?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, he's really bad. He's not good.
He popped out right away, dude.
I always just like put my notes down with their numbers, and then I know most of the skill position players, but I don't look at the nameplates for the offensive line, which I feel bad about. Offensive linemen are players too, and I have great respect for offensive linemen. I love evaluating them.
Shout out to all the single offensive linemen out there.
I've just got all these just like 66s just like circled on my note badge, being like, that wasn't good. Yeah, no, Bergstrom's rough. And when we had, you know, a new left guard in Isaac Seumalo, and this was the Titans and the Colts game where they were struggling a lot with stunts and with games. And obviously that was Steve Wisniewski was in there for a fair bit of that, and then it was the transition point. We talked a lot about how the communication on the offensive line is very distinct, and you need to know your calls, and you also need to be able to just adapt for when things don't go the way you anticipated them to go to. And that's where chemistry and playing together for a long time helps. This is obviously something the Washington offensive line doesn't have. Now, they weren't playing Nesecki in the, not in the Cowboys game, whoever they had before the Cowboys, Houston against the Texans. And so I don't know why, because like you said, Nesecki is a fantastic backup offensive tackle. I don't think they know exactly what they want to do in terms of if they want to get Christian, I think his last name is pronounced Christian, in there to develop him, or if they want to put Niseki, whatever it is. The reality is that, yeah, the weakness of this offense is absolutely going to be the interior offensive line. That's the point where they've been hit most by injuries and they had the worst depth. This reads to me like a game where we could see a 2017 style of Philadelphia defense, in the sense that, yeah, secondary obviously isn't great, but this front four is just mowing through people right now. Now, McCoy's time to throw, which we constantly talk about, this big, huge watershed 2.5 number, it's going to be less than 2.5. McCoy's a quick release. He's very willing to just go to his first read, like we talked about, and they're going to put RPO games in for him, right? And then we talked about the inside zone with Adrian Peterson gives him the opportunity from shotgun to just read a matchup on the backside. When we go to those condensed splits and we have those big pin pull ideas, and we have those big, you know, kind of like wrap ideas where you got two pullers out in front, that's a long mesh point. The quarterback will have the ball in the belly of the running back for quite some time, and so you can develop plays behind that as well. And you saw them do that against Dallas. You've seen them do that with Smith as quarterback in the games that he's played as well. That will bite into the efficacy of your pass rush a little bit, but yeah, if you can get them into a third and five plus situation, and they probably have to leave McCoy in the pocket there for a second, Philadelphia's got a big advantage in the trenches. I didn't see as many rollouts either with Smith or with McCoy as I would have expected with Smith and with McCoy. Both are mobile quarterbacks. Both are effective moving on the run. I didn't see that as much as I would have liked to from Gruden, what he calls. I think that's a very heavy aspect of the offense you should use, especially when you have a very well-established outside running game and the outside zone they hit as well. That would be something I would introduce, but there are very few offenses in the league where I would not introduce more rollouts. They're kind of my thing. So I don't know. I will see if there's an uptick there. It would make sense given what you expect from the Philadelphia front four in the pass rush, but we'll see. It's not something that they've wanted to do. They like to have McCoy drop back. He's a very like five-step drop style of passer. So there you go.
Play action should be up 50% across the league every year until it just stops working, in my opinion. So looking at these matchups at receiver versus corner, you know, Josh Doctson, Mo Harris, Trey Quinn. Then you're looking at the tight ends, Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis, against what looks like it'll be Rasul Douglas, Channing Sullivan, Cravon LeBlanc at cornerback. And then, of course, you know, the typical Jenkins takes a tight end, and then they figure out the other one as they kind of go along with the linebackers. We'll see what that
situation looks like. Do we know who we're anticipating potentially being back in this game?
I think
as far as defensive backfield?
Rasul Douglas was back. He dressed for the game and then came in when Channing Sullivan went down last week. We're hoping to get Mills back, but I'm not sure if he's going to be back. What I've heard is the Eagles are expecting to get like one back. So I guess they're planning on getting like lucky with one. So it's either going to be like Avonte Maddox or Jalen Mills, from what I can tell.
I forgot that Maddox was injured until we started talking about this. Oh my gosh.
So if Maddox is back, and I've already made the case for Big Nickel already, if he is back, I don't know if you switch it up and play Avonte at nickel with Big Nickel and then let LeBlanc play outside over Sullivan, because I was impressed with LeBlanc. And, you know, LeBlanc may have gotten away with some tugs against Odell, but I thought he played really well in that game.
Listen, if you're going to be not a very good corner, which LeBlanc is not a great corner, might as well talk and see if you can get away with them. Sometimes the chips fall your way.
He's definitely more confident than Sullivan. He's playing more confidence.
Exactly. LeBlanc over Sullivan is my same argument as Reynolds over Gary. The guy has actually been on an NFL field for a considerable period of time.
Yeah.
He's just not going to be like so far out of his depth that he's just he's effete. He's nothing. You're playing with 10 players.
Yeah.
If Maddox is healthy, yeah, you probably go Corey Graham deep, which kill me for saying that out loud.
30 yards deep. It's going to be the Greg Williams defense.
Right. Maddox in the slot. Well, when Corey Graham is your deep safety, you have to put him 50 yards deep for him to be able to get to a play and make a tackle. So
that's exactly why.
Mike, let's have 30 seconds, okay?
Yeah, let's do it. 30 seconds on the clock.
I told him to draft a safety. I said, just draft a safety. Maddox is a corner, and he's ended up playing safety. If you just drafted a safety, we wouldn't have had to deal with this problem. Why did they just draft a safety?
I don't know, man. And we were so in love with Justin Reed, the guy who is with the Houston Texans now.
Listen.
And he's balling out.
In my Monday mock for the Draft Network, I sent Deontay Thompson.
Yes, I love that.
Safety for the Bama, who probably is the best middle-of-the-field safety we've seen since Malik Hooker, and is not going to fall to 15, but he fell to 15 in the mock, so I sent him to Philadelphia. People were furious with me. Have you watched a second of Philadelphia Eagle football?
Yo, if you are mad, about Deontay Thompson, the safety, getting drafted by the Eagles at pick 15, you are out of your mind.
Listen.
Out of your mind.
The Eagles?
He's incredible.
The Eagles don't.
But we need a tackle that we're going to overdraft, and he's going to be awful.
When the Eagles play with Jenkins and McLeod, they're not playing with two safeties. They're playing with one safety, because Jenkins is a freaking linebacker. Correct. We've discussed this for the past two seasons now.
Yes.
He just lines up as a linebacker, and he does linebacker things. He does them very well. And then he plays over a little tight end flex out into the slot, and he's a slot corner, and he does that very well. And then sometimes he plays safety just to, like, screw with everybody. With Jenkins, you just leave Jenkins at the line of scrimmage. You put Thompson and McLeod as your defensive backfield, and it's the greatest thing in the world. Those are the end of my 30 seconds. Eagles need a safety. Why didn't they just freaking pick a safety? So you play Corey Graham as the deep middle, and then Avonte Maddox as the slot, and you put LeBlanc outside. That's what I think makes the most sense. Yeah.
That's what I thought too. Okay.
Ben. And you pray Douglas or Mills is healthy.
So, and look, Mills coming back would be, and I have not been a Mills fan at all, but sometimes you just need baseline fringe starter play from someone after what we've seen over the past few weeks. That would be refreshing.
Just what it will do mentally to the team to like, oh, we have a starter on the outside now. Yeah. Like, maybe things are going to be okay.
Mills isn't great, but he also, like, is where he's supposed to be 99% of the time.
Mills has actually made plays on the football before.
Yeah, he can come down and
unlike every current starting corner for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Correct. There you go. Yeah.
There it is.
So, just taking an overall look at this, and because they're friends of the show and I'm a huge fan of the work and Elliot Christ is my dude, I'm going to, because I always say no free ads, but I'm going to give them a free ad. I'm going to cite the Vegas line from The Quant Edge, www.thequantedge.com. Go check them out. Why do I say www? Everybody knows what it is now.
Because in case people don't know how to use the internet.
Yeah, well, I mean, you don't even have to put that in the internet browser now. You don't have to put in www. Anyway, the line is 6 for the Eagles, 6-point favorites for the Eagles. The over-under is 43.5. Quant Edge suggests with their betting tool that the Eagles cover. Their model shows that they are very confident with the Eagles covering, and they give a slight edge to the over. So let's call it a 44-point game, and the Eagles win by 10, which is what the Quant Edge is saying. That puts us at 27-17 Eagles, which actually I think is the exact number that you said before. Ben, in this hypothetical scenario, 17 points for the Redskins offense, over, under, what you got?
Why are we doing this prediction before we do the defense show?
We'll talk about the 27 points and the covering and all that on the next show. This is just for the Redskins offense, just the 17 points or under. You know how this works. You've been here before. Come on, Ben. What are you, Rusty?
Okay, sorry. I got confused.
I'm offended.
We need Rusty. I'm going to take the over because they're playing the Eagles secondary. Yeah. I probably would have taken the over on anything that was under like 21. I don't envision this becoming like a shootout or anything like that. It would feel very, very odd to take the under on a team that will potentially start Cremon LeBlanc and Chandon Sullivan. That just feels dirty. I don't care who the opposing quarterback is.
I mean, they put 23 on the Cowboys, so it's not like, you know, they're going to have, I think they're going to have some
the
turnovers.
The Cowboys with their vaulted defense, if you talk to anybody in national media, which has me sickened.
Yeah, they're an average defense that doesn't give up explosive plays. Great for them.
Guess what? By total DVOA, which is in part because the Eagles let the Giants play well, the Giants have now surpassed the Dallas Cowboys, which I don't love DVOA as a stat. You're much more into it than I am. But when it has the Giants above the Cowboys, I suddenly think DVOA is a great stat.
I think James Betcher's done a really good job calling that defense in New York with bad talent.
If only, Mike, somebody had told us that James Betcher was a great defense coordinator. If only there was a show, the handsome young lad and the bald man and the handsome young lad.
Let's talk about this dynamic, because we've gotten more written reviews in Apple Podcasts and iTunes and more 5-star ratings than I've been promising the listeners, because I pushed it so hard last week that I would read some of these reviews on air. So let's do that. Let's talk about this dynamic with me and you, and let's see how the listeners see it. So
this is a forced transition, because I know what the end is and I resent it, but it's fine.
So this is from Pit Eagle. 5 stars. The headline is Best Eagles Pod. I don't disagree with that. Straight facts. Find the lie. You guys are my go-to radio for my ride home from work. I'll never forget during the Super Bowl run, BLG called our shot against the Patriots. That was the first time I thought, yeah, you know what? This is our revenge Super Bowl for when they cheated us out.
I really appreciated that. I really appreciated just like being like, and I'm still pissed about 04, those MFers. Like, here we go.
Yeah. Kist is my boy, and his squirrely sidekick is not half bad either. Keep up the good work. Well, I love it. Thank you, Pit Eagle.
Squirrely.
Squirrely sidekick.
Squirrely. Squirrely. Adjective. Relating to or resembling a squirrel. Or, other definition, restless, nervous, or unpredictable, eccentric, or insane. Feels aggressive, Mike. Feels squirrely. I think I buy it more if, like, appearance-wise, I am a squirrel because I have brown hair and I'm small. Like, is that what we're going for here?
I mean,
I feel like my front teeth are a usual size.
You can overanalyze that and you can form a complex over that.
A squirrel complex?
A squirrel complex, exactly.
I'm gonna see a peanut butter sandwich today and be like, wait, am I supposed to like that or no? Okay, here's my question.
My instincts tell this one, me.
I'm gonna put this one to the listeners because I'm curious.
Yeah.
Alex K. Wynn, my favorite podcast. 5 stars. Why? Question mark. Which I like that because he's like, this is my favorite podcast in the title. And then he opens with why. Like, you know, he like really let himself into it.
Strong start.
Even after a loss, nothing puts a smile on my face like a Ben Solak meltdown. LOL. So this is interesting.
Yeah.
When have I... I'm trying to think of my meltdowns.
You know what's interesting to me, and we were talking about this before the show, the way people process who me and you are as people fundamentally and conceptually varies so widely from experience to experience.
Yeah. It's so interesting because some people are like the very traditional take, which I feel is like, oh, like Kist is so like crass and crazy and like, you know, like out there and like he has all of his like, you know, awesome like, you know, his tirades and his biz explanations and it's awesome. And then Ben is just kind of this like, you know, like little like football nerd who just gets really excited about like 13 personnel and just kind of like is more of like a alternate voice. And then like the very next review will be like, Ben is so crazy and Ben goes on tirades and which isn't like wrong. Like, I don't disagree. It's just very interesting that people, it's not like there's not like, this is the dynamic of the show. And it's a universal opinion. It's very like everybody has like different experiences.
Someone called me like
wow,
calm and cool-headed.
That was the most insane review I've ever read. It was like, thank goodness Kist is so calm on the podcast. And I was like, what happened? Which show are you listening to?
Do you think it has something to do with maybe if they follow us on Twitter or not? Because I think you've referred to my Twitter as like, you got to get through a bunch of crap, but there's like a ton of really good nuggets in there. But most of the time,
it's
like
great football analysis. And then it's like something totally unintelligible. And you're like, wait, what?
You see someone, Kiss's mom left a review.
Yeah, no, this, I like the best in the biz, 5 stars from Kiss's mom. So shout out, Ms. Kist. The Kist and Solak show is the best. Some of the most in-depth analysis of film I've ever heard in my life. These dudes know their stuff. And their dynamic is charming and innovative. I feel like that's great. I'm happy. Charming and innovative. That makes me feel good.
Awesome 5 stars by Steeg209. Loved Kist and Solak with Locked On. And I'm so happy they got involved with BGN. Now they also give a shout out to BLG. They say they love the gold breakdowns and all the guests Kist brings on as well. There's a lot of Kist praise in this one. And I'm not hating it. I'm really not hating it. My favorite pod joins my favorite Eagles website. What could be better? BLG does a, may he forever reign. BLG does a fantastic job with Bleeding Green Nation, by the way. Couldn't do any of this without him, so may he forever, in fact, reign for 10,000 years. He deserves all of the love on these reviews. We also got another one, Ram Surge, an amazing in-depth analysis, 5 stars. Amazing in-depth analysis. I think he's saying the most amazing in-depth analysis I've heard on any podcast ever by the best Eagles podcast around, with Michael Kist and Benjamin Solak. Long live BLG. Keep giving the love to BLG,
Mike,
fellas.
2 out of 2 listeners found that review helpful, in case you were wondering. Let's hit this one really quick. From Smoothie Love, go Eagles. 5-star review. Is anything silkier than listening to Michael Kist's voice? And I'm glad you opened with this, because no. And it's awful to hear your voice next to his voice all the freaking time. It makes you, like, I never once been one of those people who like, oh, I hate hearing my voice on, like, voicemails. Like, I hate, like, hearing my recorded voice. It sucks. I was like, no, my voice is fine. And then I started doing a podcast with you, and I was like, I'm going to kill my, I'm going to take my voice box out. This is the worst.
I Smoothie in Love, fact, love my voice on voicemails. I leave myself voicemails just to cheer myself up.
Okay, screw you.
Listen to myself.
But Smoothie Love does ask, one note, I do get lost sometimes in the conversation when they talk about schemes and routes, and then they pose a specific question, which is cover three cloud, ? So I don't remember what podcast we mentioned this, but there are basically two different forms of cover three. There's cover three sky, which is the more traditional cover three you think of, and cover three cloud. And sky, if you just think about like a deep safety right in the middle of the field, and then the two outside corners who are like 8 yards off the ball. If it's the Eagles defense, they're like 12 yards off the ball. Those three deep players are all pretty much going to go straight back into deep third zones. Each can take a deep third of the field. That's cover three sky. And it's called sky because that one safety, that S, sky for the safety. Cloud indicates, starting with a C, that there's one corner who's involved. So instead there are two safeties. And so think about like a two deep pre-snap alignment, two safeties. Let's say both of those safeties drop back to their right. All right. And they each take a deep third, one the far right, one the middle. And then the corner to that empty side, he now takes deep third. What that does, that lets the other corner stay up and play the flat. And you can trap routes because teams might expect that corner to drop, but instead he comes forward and the opposite corner, the other side of the field, is dropping. So it's like an asymmetrical coverage that can screw with some quarterbacks. Philadelphia runs it a bit, not too often. And you might see it against Colt McCoy as well. That is cover three cloud.
And what you can do a lot of times, if you're confused about some of these concepts, if we especially go in on them, for instance, like with cover three cloud, you can usually Google like bleeding green cover three cloud. In this case, I have a picture up of cover three cloud in my Saints red zone piece. So you would just Google bleeding green Saints red zone kissed, and you would be able to find that article. Also for cover three, all of the variations therein, or most of them anyway. There's a great series on Bleacher Report that I refer to all the time. It's by Matt Bowen, who is on NFL Matchup, which is a great show. But if you Google NFL 101 and cover three, you get a whole article with all those different concepts. And that's for a lot of different things too, not just for cover three, but like basic route combinations and things of that nature. So if there is a term on this show that we use and our description of it on the show is lacking and not really clear enough, Google bleeding green, put in that term, Google NFL 101, put in that term as well. And I can guarantee you'll find a visual representation of it. And that'll kind of help you follow along with the show as well. Because I know we kind of get in depth and it's hard to always describe what these things are doing through if they're an audio platform. So, but we do appreciate you. And if there's any other questions that you have for us, obviously on Twitter, me and Ben absolutely love interacting with you guys on Twitter. And we try to answer as many questions as we can and make sure that we're
interacting. And we make you answer questions as well, but that's to find out later.
Yes, exactly. That's part of the rules. That's part of the law. There's nothing I can do about it. And did you like my new format with that, where I'm telling people where to click?
Yes. Yes. No, I appreciated that because you're just skewing the result. And so I can claim that there's a bias if the results don't go my way. But no, Mike's very right. If you ever have any questions, just hit us up. Could not be more glad to make it easier and more enjoyable for you to listen to the podcast. That's really, I have a vested interest in you knowing what we're talking about. So please, I'm on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. He's on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. This has been the Kist and Solak show. Those 5-star ratings and reviews, man, it is something else to read through those and understand that you guys enjoyed the show enough that you wanted to go ahead and write enough about how much you like the show that I've got to click the read more button just to read everything you guys had to say. That, I mean, that puts a smile on my face that doesn't go away for a while. So we thank you so much. And if you want to leave another rating, if you want to leave a review, please go ahead and drop those always on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. And that helps us garner more listeners, and it helps the SB Nation podcast grow as a whole. And that's great for everybody. A rising tide lifts all boats. Tomorrow is the Washington Redskins defense against the Philadelphia Eagles offense. And of course, you'll get our final spread predictions as we transition into the Monday night game. Then there will also be the Gowton and Stolness show, classic BGN show, and they will be previewing the entire game from a week perspective, looking at a huge NFC East matchup for the Philadelphia Eagles. We appreciate you swinging by. We will talk to you tomorrow.
We all we got, we all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Hey everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.